In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's all go to the lobby.
That's why we're gathered here right now to talk movies. Alan Adams from The Main Edge with us, brought to you by Bangor Mall Cinema 10, 557 Stillwater Avenue, Bangor, where they have a film for everyone in the family. Welcome, Alan.
Hello, how are you?
I am wonderful. And yourself?
I'm great.
Good.
I'm great.
We were chatting about my interesting weekend. What was yours like?
Oh, you know, it was pretty low key. Friday night went to see Woody Guthrie's American Song at Penobscot Theater Company, which was a delight. On Saturday afternoon, young daughter of two friends of ours celebrated a first birthday. A happy birthday, Emma Preble.
Nice.
So that was
Emma's
that was great.
One now.
Yeah, I know, right?
You know, I don't say this just because, you know, we're friends with Jason and Jen. She is an adorable little girl.
Well, and I think we all agree it's because there's very little Preble in there.
I think that's it. Yeah, it's Jen. It's the Dunham side.
Yeah,
thank God.
Yeah, like thick hair and blue eyes, and that's pretty much what she got from.
And a lovely personality too, and we know where that comes from.
Well, sure, yeah, pretty clear. and then went had dinner with some friends Saturday night, and then yesterday I did a lot of writing and watched a bunch of football. It was pretty nice, all things considered.
Fun having NFL football back.
Yep.
I didn't watch any game in its entirety, but I bounced around. I caught the end of that Bills Jets game. It was crazy.
Yeah, no, that was fun. You know, it's just it's like you say, it's nice to have it back. You know, there's always the deep seated moral and ethical ramifications that come with watching NFL football. You know, and it's just like it's the sort of sport that makes it pretty easy to compartmentalize. And
I have
so,
to, yes.
You know, yeah. And so it's just like I'm going to fold all my concerns away.
Right.
And it's just like I'm just going to watch the game as it unfolds on the field. But yeah, no, it was a lot of great games. Actually watched all of Pat's Steelers, despite the fact that was over about 5 minutes into the second quarter. It was great, and I won't make anyone listen to me talk about it, but my fantasy team had a fantastic week as well.
Good.
Yeah,
good.
No, that's a big deal to people.
I am not in a fantasy league this year, but I got into one of those knockout pools, survivor
fun.
Pools,
yeah.
Where you pick one team a week.
Yep.
And you can only use a team once, and once you use them, they're gone. I took Seattle, which I thought was the most sure thing out there on the weekend, and I find myself following that game online.
Right.
Like, are you kidding me? The Seahawks are going to lose to the Bengals, and they end up winning by one.
Yep. Whew. NFL football, baby.
Oh, it's crazy.
Yeah. And it's funny. I just wanted to sort of mention again something that I heard you talking about as I was on my way over here. I didn't know Charlotte Wilder was getting after that field hockey star. It's just like, okay, sick him.
Yeah, absolutely.
Get him, Charlotte. Get
him.
Yeah, that's going to be good. And it's like you said, it's not going to go away. Like
no.
It has all the makings of a story that's going to result in a lot of people eating a lot of crow, I think.
Yeah, I believe so.
Which, you know what? And deservedly so, because it's, it's something that rhymes with coarse bit is
yes.
what it is.
Why, yes, it does.
You know what I mean? It's just like, and like from the moment I saw the story, I'm like, this is just, it's just ridiculous and disrespectful. And you alluded to, you know, the army of unenlightened chuds out there who are just, you know, who are perfectly willing to just be like, well, you know, the football.
Yeah.
Maction.
It was kind of weird. So I tweeted something about it right before the football game as we were seeing this develop down in Georgia, and a bunch of people liked my tweet. And I go, why does that name sound familiar, liking my tweet? Nancy Hogshead. And I remember, Olympic gold medalist in swimming.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Because Jay Billis got on the train, too, and was tweeting about it. And so I think I got pulled inadvertently into that stream of
but
stuff.
It's a story that I look forward to seeing how it all plays out.
Yes, I do as well. Well, let's talk movies. How many did you see this weekend?
Just got the one.
Okay.
It was a big one.
Yeah.
I was lucky enough to see it a little bit earlier than most people did.
Yes, you were. You were at the big and sitting pretty close to the big guy.
It was so funny. We're sitting there and Bobby Russell comes down and does his little opening spiel and I'm just like, he's on this side. Okay, great. And it doesn't really click until he does the introduction. It's like, oh man, yeah, Stephen King's going to be pretty right in here. And then he was like right there. And so my wife, bless her heart, is trying to surreptitiously take photos. Like she doesn't want to be like the one where it's like, you know, hold the camera up and all that. But at the same time, it's like, he's really close. And a number of people that she showed the photo to were like, oh man, so he just came over and started talking to you, huh? And it's like, no, he was giving his remarks. And it's like, yeah, no, he came over and talked to you. And it was just ridiculous. But yeah, and it's something that I made mention of. It's like one of the many great things about living in this town is occasionally not only do you get to see a Stephen King movie a little bit earlier than the rest of the world, thanks to the folks here at WKIT, WZON. Sometimes the man himself is in the house watching it with you, and that's just, it's just too cool for words.
Well, and I haven't seen it yet, but Carrie told me that he's got a pretty sweet cameo in this. That must have generated quite a reaction.
Yeah, no, it was, the response was great. It's funny, because I feel like we haven't seen him on screen in a little while. Am I correct in saying that? I feel like it's been a little bit since he's done like a legit cameo. Like, I think he's maybe popped up for a line or two, but like, he had a full-on scene in this one.
And I was trying to think of any time that he's had as long of a scene as that one was.
Yeah, like the only one I could think of was Creepshow, and that was a long time ago. But it was a full scene. Him and James McAvoy. It was great. But It Chapter Two. I will lead with the fact that I really dug this movie. Like I really enjoyed it. I will concede that I think I enjoyed the first one a little bit better. That's a case of personal preference. Like, there are a few things that fit as neatly into my like sort of horror movie wheelhouse as creepy things happening to children, which I know makes me sound like a real weirdo. And especially with Stephen King properties, like he just has this wonderful ability to sort of create like sort of living, breathing like child characters. In a way that not many writers, certainly not many genre writers, are able to manage. And so to see that translated onto the big screen was really cool. And we got to revisit a lot of those actors in various flashbacks over the course of the film. It's the back half of the book. It's the youngsters of the first part of the movie having to return to Derry after 27 years because the fight they thought they had won was still, they still had to fight it. And so they return in all their glory, in all their brilliantly cast glory. I mentioned McAvoy as Bill Denbrough, Bill Hader, who is just fantastic. Like, I mean, I know everybody's been saying it, but he is phenomenal in this movie as grown Richie Tozier. Jessica Chastain is in this as Ben, and it's just on and on and on, this wonderful ensemble of talented actors. And they have to come back to their hometown and sort of remember what went before in an effort to figure out a way to win the fight against Pennywise, the dancing clown, played again exquisitely by Bill Skarsgård, and this sort of fight once and for all.
And Carrie made the comment the other day that, yeah, maybe it's not quite as good as the first one, but that's because it raised the bar so high for horror that the sequel is better than 95% of the horror films that are out there.
Well, I think that's the thing. It's when you raise the bar that high, it's not fair to expect, you know, a repeat performance because, I think of the joy that people derived from that first film was that we didn't know how good it was going to be, you know, like we didn't have a real sense of how it was going to work. And once we saw Andy Muschietti's vision up there and we were able to really see it come together, and especially with that brilliant, brilliant cast of young actors, it was just like, Oh no, this isn't just a good horror movie. This isn't just a great horror movie. This is a great movie, period. And so, you know, that's, you know, those are high expectations, and there's no shame in just meeting those expectations. And that's how I feel about this movie. I think there have been some complaints from various places on the internet about how the movie's not as scary as the first one, or not scary enough. And to me, it's a deliberate choice, because the whole point of dividing the movie in this way is to establish that sort of line of demarcation between childhood and adulthood. And here's the thing, man. Being scared when you're 11 is a hell of a lot different than being scared when you're 40.
Mm.
You know, and it's the kind of things that you fear, the way you experience that fear, like all of that changes. And so I thought the two movies did a wonderful job of reflecting the differences between those kinds of fears. Like, it was in the original, you know, in the first movie, it's all very straightforward, and, you know, like jump scares, and like clowns are scary, and like, you know, and like blood and guts and monsters and all that stuff. And it's just, you know, that's the sort of thing that scares you, the monster under the bed or in the closet. Like, those are the things that scare you when you're a kid. When you're an adult, those fears are much more internal. Like, it's much more an emotional sort of internalized fear. And like, that's an incredibly difficult thing to like render visually. But I thought in terms of the aesthetic, the tone, like, they did a wonderful job of really sort of finding ways to capture that sort of insular nature of the fear, as opposed to, you know, instead of being an outer sort of thing, it's an inner thing. And when you look at it in those terms, it explains so much about, you know, the notion of the way things looked, the tone in terms of both the scary stuff and the funny stuff, because this is a very funny movie, surprisingly so. Like, the first one was surprisingly funny, but this one, I think, is even funnier. And it's funny because, in the same way that, you know, that's how so many of us sort of diffuse the fears that we have, is through humor, is through jokes. And to have that sort of tone adopted, it was just, I just thought it was the absolute right way to handle it. So yeah, I was blown away. It was, you know, it wasn't a perfect movie. Like, could it have been 20 minutes shorter? Probably. Like, there were some spaces where you could have let a little air out of it. But there were so many things in it that just were so striking. Whether you're talking about some of the performances, I mentioned Bill Hader, Jessica Chastain is very good in this movie as well. Stuff like moments, like the sort of the allusion to the Charlie Howard murder that kicks off the film. Like, so, I mean, it's not really a spoiler if it's the first, it's literally the first thing that happens in the movie. But it alludes to that terrible tragedy. And it was remarkable to see that in a place where everybody knows what that story is. Like, I don't know how people in, you know, I don't know how that plays in Peoria. You know what I mean? Like, right, I don't know how. Like, it's still a very striking, very tragic moment, but I don't think anyone, I don't think anywhere else in the world is going to have as visceral a reaction.
Right. It means more to us.
Yeah.
Yeah. My daughter knew what it referenced, but the friend that she brought is not from Maine.
Right.
She didn't know that it referenced something else, that it referenced a real event that had happened in Bangor, because, you know, she's 19 or 20.
Yeah.
But it's still had a significant impact even without that realization. But yeah, for anybody that was in Bangor at that time, man, that's a rough way to start a movie.
Oh man. And you could feel it in the room.
Yeah.
Like, you really could. It was just like, and it's like, and that's all before the credits roll, and you're just like, oh man. And you're just there, and it just draws you in such a very, like, very distinct and powerful way. And so you're just like, all right, we're doing this. So let's do this.
And a lot of other Bangor Easter eggs as well, tucked away in there.
Yeah, well, there's, like, you know, the Jade of the Orient restaurant, which it's like, oh yeah, it's the Oriental Jade. I mean, it's not, but it is. There's a lot. There's so much of that in this movie.
The Oriental Jade one was really funny, but the interior looks so much more like another Bangor restaurant. Sings.
Yeah, no, there was, like,
wow.
Yeah, it was
wow.
really strange.
It was this weird sort of, and it's like, and you have to think that maybe Mr. King had a conversation about it, or maybe it was just, you know, a really, really intuitive production designer or what. But yeah, like, no, I noticed okay. that too. It's like, I've been in this restaurant. Like, I haven't been in this restaurant, but I've been in this restaurant. Like, there's so much of that in this movie. Like, you know, there are all these aerial shots where they kind of show like the downtown, and it's like, it's Bangor. Like, it's not, but it's like this sort of alternate universe Bangor, which is what Derry is. And so
exactly.
for the idea for them to be able to sort of capture that vibe so succinctly was just really impressive. And it's so neat to experience it from that perspective. And it's like, and you're just reminded of how sort of fortunate you are that you're one of the ones who knows. Yeah. Like, you know, people out there, they're enjoying it. They're like, oh, what a picturesque little town. It's like, oh, no, that's supposed to be a place that I've been to that place. You know, I know exactly where they're going, when they're going. It's just, oh, yeah, so great.
Which is what made the book terrifying all those years ago. I know that sewer. Ah!
Yep. And we get a Paul Bunyan shout out and you know, stuff like that. It was just... Yeah.
And Carrie said also a fun cameo from new friend of downtown, Peter Bogdanovich.
Yeah, yeah. And I wasn't even expecting that. And it was great because it was a scene that basically kicked off a running joke with regards to Bill Denbrough, who's grown up to be a novelist, being unable to write a good ending, which, I suppose, the millions of books being sold and the vast fortune being accumulated probably makes it a little easier to take that hit, but that's still a nice bit of self-deprecation on the part of Mr. King. Allowing the acknowledgement that there are a lot of critics out there who might levy such an accusation at his work.
And I read an interview with him over the weekend. I can't remember where it was. It was a really wonderful interview where he said, oh, I do take a certain satisfaction in the fact that I've outlived most of my critics.
Oh, yeah. It was the Guardian. It was, yes, yeah, he did an interview for the Guardian. In that interview, he talked about that. He also mentioned people that he would be interested in collaborating with. And one of the ones he mentioned was Colson Whitehead.
Yes.
And I'm like, why is that not happening like right now?
You know who else said that? Colson Whitehead, who tweeted back
and
said, I'm in.
Yeah,
let's
please.
Do it.
Whenever you're ready, Mr. King.
Yeah. And by the way, oh, my, and you. You brought it to my attention here. Oh my God, The Nickel Boys!
Oh, it's such
great.
A good book.
Wow,
it's such
great.
A good book. Speaking of Mr. King's novelistic endeavors, his new book, The Institute, comes out tomorrow.
That's right.
And my review will be running in this week's Main Edge.
Looking forward to hearing all about that.
But yeah, so It Chapter Two. Giddy up!
There you go. Thanks, Alan.
My pleasure.
Alan Adams, Main Edge, talking movie with us. He does it every Monday right here on the program. You can check out all of Alan's reviews. Click on the movie review tab on our website and see what Alan has had to say about any films, any good ones, any bad ones, any significant ones in recent months.